Chinese auto sales went up 100% last year. Chinese oil consumption is projected, according to the Japan Times, to go up 500% by the year 2030.
Now, are there any oil resources in China?
Some, but China became a net importer of oil about 6 years ago. But Chinese economic growth, and this one little picture, snapshot that I'm going to make for you, perfectly portrays the horns of the dilemma the world is in right now. The U.S. and Western Europe G8 financial markets are based upon growth. There will be no growth unless Wall Street and Berlin and London and Paris and et cetera keep selling consumer goods to China, all of which demand and use energy and electricity and oil and everything else. If you take away the sales, the financial markets collapse anyway. So there's the dilemma crystallized in a snapshot picture. Damned if you do, and damned if you don't. Many people are now who are now starting to get wise to this, now that we have people like Michael Meacher of Britain, incredibly dedicated scientists like those from the Association for the Study of Peak Oil. Great website, by the way, peakoil.net, www.peakoil.net. Now the question becomes, what do I do not only in terms of my family looking at where I live, what do I do financially, what do I do, so on and so forth. One group of people says, I don't care what I do, just show me how to make money off of it. Well, let me paint the insane picture. There was one economist who spoke at the Peak Oil Conference in Paris, very respected economist from the Netherlands, who said, quote, "It may not be profitable to slow the effects of peak oil." In other words, they had looked at peak oil and they couldn't find a way to make money out of saving people's lives. So they weren't going to do anything. Anybody who just wants to make money, I don't want to talk to you, actually, because since 9/11, we've had major changes, especially in the last year. The world is waking up, and we are making a difference. We are making politicians and policymakers listen to us about what we want and what's fair, demanding that they tell us the truth. So people have to ask not only what they can do with their money in terms of protecting themselves, but in terms of giving energy to this change in consciousness, which is going to be necessary to save the planet. Vote with your money. Support the people who tell you the truth. Many of these conferences around the world in the last 6 months, but especially in the last couple of weeks, Berlin and New York City, would not have happened without people pouring out their money to people who were giving them good information, because they realized that that is changing the canvas upon which we're painting these next couple of years. But also, you have to look toward, there's going to be an increasing, and I am absolutely certain, inevitable trend toward, I call it tribal living. My grandparents survived the Great Depression. In the United States, people survived the Great Depression by forming neighborhood communities and, you know, larger social family networks that were self-supporting and reinforcing, instead of living in these little isolated boxes, wasting energy, wasting not only oil and gas energy, but wasting social and human energy. And I think you're going to see an increasing trend toward communal or extended family societies in which there will be great efficiencies and economies in terms of energy, in terms of food, and common welfare. I would look during this time for people to start to develop, and if I had money to invest, I would start to develop industries that had to do with power generating capacities on a small level, from solar, from wind, that you could put in your own house. Insulation technologies, because these are no longer choices that we can put off for somebody else. These are matters of survival. The financial markets, I don't trust. I never have trust. They're all rigged. I strongly recommend that people buy some physical gold. That's what I've done with my meager resources. But that you start developing your skills and look for how you can make money by helping other people survive. I think that's the true market for the future.
And when you say the future, what's your time frame? You say starting now. We're in this process.
Yes.
But is it a 5-year, 10-year, 15, or 20-year picture, or is it...
Much, much sooner. We will see in North America, no later than the winter of 2004-2005, large numbers of people freezing to death in the winter because there's nothing to heat their homes, whether it be fuel oil or natural gas. We will see gas prices begin to rise as world oil supplies become squeezed tighter and tighter. There will always be oil in the ground if you want to be an amoeba and go down 200,000 feet to get, you know, 3 drops of oil. The point is that when it takes more energy to get a barrel of oil out of the ground than you get from burning it, the oil is useless. That's starting now. But I think as far as the oil picture is concerned, what you're going to see is a lot more warfare. You're going to see a lot more American sons and daughters, possibly the reinstitution of the draft at some point. The military is very disheartened right now. And one thing that I find very encouraging is that a great many of my friends who were combat veterans from Vietnam are experiencing very strong post-traumatic stress syndrome now as a result of watching a whole new generation of youth being consigned to this insane warfare. But warfare is going to continue, and it's going to get worse. And you will see economic struggles as geography takes over for everything else. Britain will inevitably join the European Union because Britain will become a net importer of gas and oil within 3 years. These are Britain's own figures. The North Sea is dry. Alaska's dry. Whatever oil is in the Arctic Natural Wildlife Reserve is only the barest of a short-term solution that can be used to soften the impact of peak oil.
One of the things I was thinking of as you were describing the future was an interview I did many years ago with a Scottish gypsy. His name was Tony, and he lived out of a little bag that he carried on a stick over his shoulder, like the classic hobo. He was a very elegant hobo, but he was definitely living in on the fringe of society. And we talked about his life, his work, his purposes. He was extremely articulate about the gypsy nomadic lifestyle of travel across a landscape without any fixed location or route. He used a sentence that has always stayed in my mind where he was talking about the change in society, and he said, since the end of the age of the horse, and then in parentheses he said, perhaps temporary. And then he went on to talk about all the consequences. So now you've brought up the horses and the amount of horses and grazing land we need to sustain the population. The irony is that it is through the oil technology and its development that we have the internet. And the internet is the most dynamic means of global education yet created. It cuts through, so far, all attempts to control it and limit it. It's just too widespread and too intricate for any one entity to shut it down. So far. And it has had social effects that have crossed through the national boundaries. It's a kind of a gypsy message system. Now, the information that we're covering on this CD, which can only be listened to if you have electricity.
Correct.
And spread and shared across the world, across the internet through satellite communications, which don't work without electricity.
Correct.
Before the big power failure and the electricity going off, the impending global blackout, which you've just described, there's still time to get people informed. And it's ironic that those two things happen together, and it's the first time it's ever been possible to alert the whole planet to its problem.
That's the wonderful Zen nature of all of this.
There it is.
This balancing of everything.
And I remind myself that back to the age of the horse, life in Rome, I've traveled in Europe quite a bit, and I've seen the ruins of Rome. I've been to Pompeii. I've been to Machu Picchu. I've seen high cultures that predate the electrical petroleum reality. And the profound wisdom of certain basic cultures, indigenous cultures, that we have paved over, but which the embers are still burning. So the best guess in my mind as to an outcome at the end of this tunnel is that either the lights will go out, and it will go out for many, many, many people permanently, or the tribal element will carry through that Holocaust of our own making, and we will come out with an interesting situation, if we can preserve our knowledge, where we are once again friendly with the horses and other means of getting around, which can be homemade and not require industrial base to build the solar collectors and even the bicycles. And some quality of life will be sent forward. Now, short of intervention from an alien culture from off the planet, do you see any third alternative?
Well, taking the extreme long view, I share that optimism. I personally believe that whoever created this planet and this species is presenting the human race with an alternative, either evolve or perish, either grow up or die. And I don't believe that the universe will continue to underwrite the antics of a spoiled child. However, looking back at all the great civilizations and cultures that flourished before the age of oil, bear in mind that the population of planet Earth at times was 500 million people. Now it's 6.5 billion. So what you have described is a lifeboat. And it is a foregone conclusion that 6.5 billion people, 8 billion people cannot reach that lifeboat. To quote a good friend and a teacher, Colin Campbell, an oil expert, the founder of the Association for the Study of Peak Oil, he has a resume longer than War and Peace in the oil industry and in science, said, the species Homo sapiens may not become extinct, but the subspecies of petroleum man most certainly will become extinct. There are opportunities for growth, and you have described the great race that we are all in. Matthew Simmons said, the internet is the SUV of energy consumption on the planet. And yet that's the device which may help us to find some solutions to communicate, to penetrate beyond an economic paradigm more than anything else, an economic and political paradigm that is inherently suicidal. I always have hope, and the reason why I always have hope is because that I know that there is a wisdom greater than mankind's intellect. There is a spiritual existence which is way beyond this, and that it's necessary for us to reorient ourselves with some degree of humility toward that and toward each other. I think one of the most prophetic lines I ever heard was from a movie which happens to be my favorite spy movie of all time, called 3 Days of the Condor. Great movie with Robert Redford and Max von Sydow. The CIA had this plan to start seizing all the world oil supplies because the world was going to run out of oil. That's amazing for a 1976 movie. And at the end of the movie, there's a confrontation between Robert Redford, the good guy, and Cliff Robertson, the bad guy from the CIA. And Cliff Robertson says to Redford, what do you think the American people are going to ask us to do when there's no oil? They're going to ask us to go out and get it. What do you think they're going to want us to do when there's no food or whenever anything else starts to run out? And Robert Redford said, I think they'd want you to ask them. The people need to be asked.
Buckminster Fuller had a vision of a grid that would cover the entire planet for energy sharing purposes, and he actually worked out the technology of that, and it was quite doable, so that energy would be used where it was most needed and shared from areas where at a particular time of day it was less necessary, where people were sleeping. It's, I think the acronym for it is GENI, G-E-N-I. I'm not sure exactly what it stands for, Global Energy Network. I'm not sure exactly of the words anymore, but there were people who were actively promoting that as an option and something that we could start doing. And I was wondering if you were familiar with that or had any comment on it.
Vaguely, yes. And I think I am a former detective, but, you know, I've been a journalist, and I'm a very practical guy. I got to see how it works and how the infrastructure is going to be addressed. But one thing that raises something that is absolutely inevitable, and I think we're going to see this within a very few short years, is a drastic change in work schedules and lifestyles, because all peak energy consumption always occurs in the 17th hour of the day, which is 5 p.m., wherever that may be. At a time when businesses are running, people are going home, people are also starting to get home, and that's when energy use peaks. And we are going to see work schedules, and we are going to see many people now working night shifts and graveyard shifts to amortize energy usage over the 24-hour period to avoid these peak surges, because the infrastructure is not going to be built. So that will bring with it its own separate set of societal and cultural changes.
So given the prospect of being in a situation which is going where it's going, no matter what we do about it, as far as oil reserves and energy reserves are concerned, what's your best thought about what a positive thinking person can do to meet this challenge and come through it in good shape?
Well, the good news is that there are a number of opportunities that are presenting themselves as the situation evolves, and that people who are already thinking outside the box have a leg up, and that's why more avenues of action are presenting themselves. One of the things I'm going to do is, from the wilderness, my organization is going to move probably to Oregon, where we can set up a test bed to evaluate a number of different post-petroleum paradigm lifestyles, energy alternatives. There's a tremendous amount of bad information out there about alternative energy sources. Some may help much better than others, and many of the ones that are foremost on people's minds right now are not as good as they think, and there are others that may be better. We're going to look at the energy lifestyles, permaculture issues, architectural issues, how you build to deal with such things, and even social and living style issues. I personally believe that we will see an inevitable trend toward group, communal, tribal kind of living as resources become more scarce, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. But we will go to evaluate these and report on those developments to help give people better choices to make. Everybody who is outside the box can also take their own time and evaluate their own living situation and make changes in their own lifestyle. It's vastly different. You have obviously more you can do if you live in a single family home than if you live in an apartment or a major metropolitan area. But there are a great many things that can be done. On a societal level, we have a number of alternatives. It's no question now that the government is operating, if you will, as an organized crime operation, a RICO, ongoing criminal enterprise. We have $3.3 trillion stolen out of the U.S. Treasury. Former Assistant Secretary of Housing Catherine Austin Fitz has done tremendous work on that. She has raised some big questions because with the infrastructure issues that present themselves as peak oil hits us in the face, we need the stolen money back to begin to change infrastructure at the local environment, state environment, and in the national arena. But she's also raised some other issues, given the fact that the money has been stolen, that the government now is in violation of vast portions of the Constitution, that they aren't accountable for the way they handle our money. She's raised one option of escrowing our income taxes and refusing to pay them to the government for those who choose not to and who feel a responsibility for their government until such time as the government accounts for all the trillions of dollars of our money for which it has a fiduciary responsibility. I, for one, think that's a tremendous idea. Some might even go further even to stop paying taxes at a federal level altogether. And as I was implying throughout the course of this, the current economic paradigm is not sustainable. So the question is there another economic paradigm that creates energy? We currently live in a world where it's profitable to destroy human life and survivability. The way to change that has to do with swapping debt for equity. We live in a world that's financed by debt. And to make neighborhoods, if you will, corporations, where the equity is owned by the people who live in the neighborhood, outsiders can invest and make money, but they can't vote on how the money works in that particular place. And they can only make money if you flip this model when living conditions or lifestyles or the environment improves for the people who live there. This can be applied on a local level and expanded to the federal level. But this is stuff that's all now new and in development. And these are responses that are arising as a result of the crisis. I'm going to need to work out financing issues to get to Oregon, but the trend is clearly there. The support is there. And where the need makes itself known, human creativity will step in to fill the void.
What it sounds to me like you're saying is that the crisis is true to its name. As you know, the Chinese character for crisis means opportunity for change. Mm-hmm. So what you're beginning to talk about now are things which perhaps we should have been doing all along, but we were fiddling while Rome burned or while the oil burned,
right?
Blithely going ahead if this was endless and magical and not taking into account the bigger picture and the planetary reserves and the entire ecosystem that we are part of. It's better late than never that we're beginning to reevaluate our parameters for ourselves and find out what is sustainable living and how we should have been doing it all along. And maybe it's not too late to correct some of the big errors.
The people who start now, the people who are out of the box, the people who recognize the crisis, the people who want to think creatively and who are willing to make changes now will be the ones who have lifeboats or an ark, let's say, available when the rest of the world finds itself up the creek.
So I hope that in our next conversation, a year or two or three from now, when we add on to this course, we'll be able to go into those positive steps in more detail after you've had a chance to research them further and collect the best information.
I think that we'll have some good things to report.
Very good. Thank you.